Welcome to All Sides Weekend. I'm Eric French, and with summer just around the corner, that brings summer vacation and summer camp. Instead of marshmallow roasts and canoeing, one Columbus camp is offering drum sets and electric guitar classes and self-esteem. Joining me now from Girls Rock Columbus is Meg Murnan. Welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And also Caitlin McGurk. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Before we talk about any of the musical stuff, let's talk about the self-esteem component of the show. You say that you use music as an sort of a vehicle for girls to build self-esteem. How exactly does that happen?
Well, it's not just music. The thing that we're doing with our camp that sets it apart from a lot of other camps is also including a lot of workshops that encourage lessons on self-defense, media literacy, stuff like that. I mean, a big part of it, too, is just that I personally feel like if something like this existed when I was a kid, it would have changed my life completely. So it's all about just making young girls realize that they are capable of doing absolutely anything that they want.
And you talk about being encouraged to take creative risk. What does that mean?
I think what we're trying to encourage is to create an environment where a camper can come in, and if they've never played drums, they can take that risk and try it out. Like, we don't require any musical experience. And so they can come into the space and try out something and talk about something that maybe they can't talk about at school or at home. And, you know, we're creating an open environment for them to do that.
And are both of you musicians also?
Well, sort of. What's interesting, and one of the reasons why I really wanted to get involved with this camp early on is because I wanted to be a musician my entire life. I played the flute in high school and then gave it up because it was not cool. And always wanted to be a drummer. And it wasn't until I moved to Ohio about 2 years ago and I got involved with sort of the punk scene in town that I found it to be one of the most, like, open and encouraging scenes I've ever been a part of. And it was, for the first time in my life, totally unintimidating at the age of 27 to decide I am now a musician. I'm going to get a drum set and play the drums. And I didn't take any real lessons other than a few friends showing me some stuff to do. And I got to play in some bands for a little while. So barely a musician, but I think that's kind of what we're trying to show our campers is that anyone can be if they just give it a shot. So
great. Why do you think, why is this just for girls?
So it's, the camp is open to female-identified youth as well as trans folks and gender-variant youth. And another important factor of our camp is we want it to be an inclusive space for folks or young folks, people that are questioning, that aren't sure if they have a place that they can fit into in society, and they can come and express themselves and have, like, a safe place for that. So it is, you know, it's girls, but it's also open to a lot of people. So
yeah, and there's a lot of this kind of thing, I think, available and more. And, you know, most young boys are the ones that are encouraged to pick up an electric guitar or, you know, a drum set. So we want to kind of break that barrier a little bit more, even though that's started to change a lot, and show, you know, kids of all ages that they too can be drummers. So
yeah, and I was recently reading about how statistically boys are given a guitar like around the age of like 13 or 14, and women and young girls are given guitars around the age of between the ages of like 19, 20, 21, and won't start playing out until their early 20s. So there is that difference. So hopefully we'll be able to make some difference by giving some 12-year-olds guitars.
Yeah, why is that? I mean, I was at Guitar Center last weekend, and as I walked in, I saw maybe 100 guys between the ages of 13 and, say, 50, and everybody was just geeking out over guitars. And I didn't really notice any girls playing guitars.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, unfortunately, just because of the way our society has been for a very long time, although this is changing, it's, you know, women are encouraged to play piano or flute, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with playing those things, which we both have, but less encouraged to play louder things, you know, less delicate instruments. And, you know, we also want our campers to feel encouraged to know their stuff. You know, they're going to get trained on how to use equipment and how to run sound and stuff like that, so that when they do go into a place like Guitar Center, and they're surrounded by guys, a lot of whom which want to try to explain to them how to use everything as if they automatically wouldn't know how, that they don't have to feel, you know, they can stand up to that and not have to feel like they have to constantly ask for help.
Do you think a lot of that's just because maybe the classic rock guitar heroes are all guys?
Yeah, probably.
So what do they learn, and how is what they learn at your camp going to be different than what you can learn, say, in a private lesson or in a music class at school?
As for the actual instruction, I think that what's different about our camp is we're providing mentorship as well as, you know, the educational piece. And another thing about our camp is we're going to be, how do I say this? Like encouraging to think outside of the box, something that like, and push their limits, and opening their eyes to things that they may not get in like compulsory education systems or even in music lessons. So, yeah.
Or even at home necessarily.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not, a big thing to point out is that even though, you know, because of maybe the title or whatever, people would automatically think it's like a punk camp. And that it's only music related. It's also, like we've said, a creative arts camp. So there are those workshop components, media literacy, teaching young kids how to understand what advertising is telling them and stuff like that. So although we're not trying to push our beliefs on anyone at all, but we want to kind of give our campers like alternative ways of thinking about things and open up their eyes more. So.
This is All Sides Weekend. I'm Eric French, and we're talking to Meg Murnan and Caitlin McGurk from Girls Rock Columbus. It's a summer camp that's coming up this summer here in Columbus, and it's open to girls who want to learn about music and all kinds of artistic expression and just sort of grow as people. Let's talk about DIY for a second. I've noticed that you don't have titles within your organization. And the do-it-yourself mindset kind of has that idea of, well, I don't really need a record label to put out records, or I don't need a publisher to make my own books. How did that attitude, how did this spring from that attitude?
Definitely, because all of us are in some way coming from like a DIY community. Almost all of our organizing core members are writers that have self-published or musicians that have, you know, put out records on their own, or our friends have started their own record labels. So there's definitely that ethic like ingrained in everyone. So,
yeah. And just, again, encouraging the campers that they can do all of this themselves, like how I spoke to, you know, just being able to pick up a drum set and figure that out myself. You know, we want to show them that those possibilities are out there. They don't necessarily need the formal training that a lot of them maybe don't even have financial access to. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the mentorship part is a huge part of it. You know, it's not like we are all, some of us are, but we're not all formally trained teachers. And we are learning a lot just from this experience ourselves on how to run a camp. So we are doing it ourselves.
I saw on your website you have a pretty impressive list of bands and artists that are going to be collaborating with you. Tell me about a couple of those artists and how specifically they take part in the camp.
Well, a lot of the bands that were actually listed on the website and the artists are all people who have supported us. So they're people who have been willing to play benefit shows, of which we've had many. At this point, we've raised just over $2,000, and we have two more big benefits coming up that are also being helped out by local DJs. And, you know, those names are listed. We've had a few artists that have done logo design for us. And so that's how we've gotten support from the community. And nearly everyone we've asked has been just incredibly helpful and willing to participate. I can talk to the two benefits that we have coming up soon. We're doing a benefit brunch at Seven Sun Brewery, and it is welcome and open to families. There'll be a food truck there. So although it is a bar, it's a family-friendly space.
And there'll be non-alcoholic GRC drinks, too,
yeah.
that are curated by Sarah Yetter.
Yes. And that's on June 8th from 11 to 4 p.m. at Seven Sun, which is on 4th Street, 4th Avenue?
4th and 4th.
Yeah.
And we'll have all of this information linked to our website, wosu.org/allsides. I also understand that at the end of the week, there's going to be a performance.
Yes, at the end of the camp, we'll have a final performance. It's going to be at the Garden Theater in the Short North Stage on High Street. And it's going to be an afternoon performance. So it's open to the public and everyone can come in, and parents and friends and supporters can come and see the final performance of all of the bands that have been formed. And I'm hoping that we can, if from the zine workshops and the comic workshops, we'll be able to kind of have some of the pieces that the girls worked on too.
Yeah, the camp is from Sunday, August 3rd through Saturday, August 9th. So August 9th is when that show will be.
And the camp is here in Columbus. Normally when I think of camp, I think of you take a duffel bag and live in a bunk. I mean, this is just a workshop, right? This isn't like on-site camping or anything like that.
It's just a day camp. It's not an overnight camp.
Right.
Yeah, it's 9 to 5 p.m. for, Sunday through that following Saturday. We decided to not do an overnight camp in case that's uncomfortable for some people, which I could totally understand, camping with other, campers that they've never met before. So it's a day camp, and we are also offering a early drop-off, too. So we're trying to make it as totally open and friendly to anyone who wants to participate, to speak to the funding we're doing. We are really, putting all our efforts into fundraising, because right now the camp for an entire week of day camp only costs between $50 and $150 on a sliding scale. If we could, we would make it free completely. And what we're trying to do is make it so that we can actually completely sponsor as many campers as possible, because we're really trying to gear this towards, different neighborhoods in Columbus where a lot of the young people that live over there don't have access to this kind of thing. So we don't want there to ever be a financial barrier. We're also hoping to have enough money so that we can provide transportation for people who might not be able to get to the camp. So
there's also a link on the website where you can not only donate to the GRC, but you can also support directly a camper. And so there is that option if anyone would like to do that.
And is this the first year for doing this here in Columbus?
Yes, it is our first year.
Mm-hmm. All right. And depending on how this goes, is this something you hope to do annually or?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're hoping to only grow from here. I mean, it's really, I can't even tell you how thankful we are for the support that we've received so far. And if this just continues and we can keep fundraising, whatever money is left over is going towards next year and years after that. And we just hope to keep building. At this point, we've actually worked really closely with Girls Rhythm and Rock Camp, who's also a nonprofit here in Columbus. And we've worked with them, and they'll be sharing some of their musical equipment with us, as well as local musicians who are also just letting us borrow their stuff. But down the line with funding, it would be great if we could actually have all of our own equipment, too. So
you're trying to keep the cost affordable for everybody. You don't have to specifically have experience with an instrument. And even if you don't own an instrument, something will be provided for you. How do they determine, let's say everybody wants to play drums. I mean, what do you do if you have 30 drummers show up?
That's an interesting question. the campers are selected by a lottery. And so once we get all the campers, there's going to be 30 of them. We have paperwork for them to fill out that has their first choice instrument, their second choice instrument, and their third choice. And so we'll kind of curate it through that. The campers do have an opportunity on the first day of camp to sort of choose their bandmates. It's assisted by us, but so we'll be able to hopefully make that issue dissipate.
Yeah.
And as far as the bands go, can they play any kind of music they want? Does it have to be rock music? What are they going to do?
They can play whatever they want. We really want to encourage that. I think on the application, too, there's a point to fill out, what their favorite kind of music is, their favorite bands, what they're listening to right now. If we're going to try to just work with whatever they're interested in doing, So if there's campers that form into their band and they decide they want to do hip hop, we'll totally train them on that, on anything they want. And we're also offering keyboards too. So
cool. More
than just the basics.
Well, I want to thank my guests right now, Meg Murnan and Caitlin McGurk from Girls Rock Columbus, for joining us today.
Thanks.
Thank you.
We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. But as we go out, we're going to play a short clip from one of the bands associated with Girls Rock Columbus. This is a song from a band called All Dogs.
Yay.
Yay.
Thanks.
I want to see you go back to the NPR News.
Slept against the wall, head back on a chair, left my jacket on.
Welcome back to All Sides Weekend. I'm Eric French. Columbus is a hub for talented singer-songwriters, and we actually just heard a clip of one of those talented singer-songwriters, Donna McGavro. Now we're also having some of those singer-songwriters showcased on a new locally produced television program. It's called Songs at the Center, and here to talk about it is the co-creator and host of Songs at the Center, Eric Nesda. Thanks for being here.
Nice to be here, Eric, and thanks for having us.
Right on. Yeah. And also joining us is the artistic director of the McConnell Center, John Cook. Welcome, John.
Thank you. Thanks, Eric.
So, Eric, let's talk just a little bit about the premise of the show. The first thing I noticed when I watched the episode was that you have the audience on the stage with you.
Yeah, this was an idea that came to me. It was really emerging of two things when I look back. Number one, as you know, I've been playing songwriter rounds in Nashville at the Bluebird Cafe and other places like that for a decade. And there's so many good songwriters in Nashville that they created this format of having three or four or five songwriters on a stage or in a circle performing. So you get to hear all four or five of them. And they just go round robin for an hour or two, something like that. So that was one of the things. But the other thing was, strangely enough, about 20 years ago, I did an employee recognition event for one of the hospital systems in town. And as a way of honoring their employees for this event, they put the employees on the stage. And so somewhere in my subconscious, I merged those two ideas, and I had this concept of, let's put everybody on the stage. Let's do a circle with the songwriters in the center of the circle with the audience on stage around them. And this subliminally gives us the message, and a very true message, that in the singer-songwriter genre, the audience is just as important to the performance as the performer, because they too need to be engaged.
You're being featured on Channel 4's .2 channel, MeTV.
Correct.
And I know the .2 channels are still kind of a relatively new invention for a lot of stations, and I know a lot of stations have tried maybe some things that they wouldn't have normally put on their main channel. How does programming like this fit into the local television broadcast?
Well, it's a great opportunity. After I had this idea, I had a serendipitous meeting with Dan Bradley, the general manager at NBC4. And he was talking to me about the .2 channels, as they call them. And he said that there's a tremendous opportunity there to do 1950s-style television with contemporary technology. So in other words, when you look at the creativity of the 50s and how they were just learning this new medium television and all the kinds of things that they were doing, that's the kind of opportunity that is provided in these .2 channels, and that's the one that we're taking advantage of. And we're learning every step along the way, too. With every show we do, we have a list of about 100 things that we're going to keep working on. But it's just a tremendous opportunity for creativity and to develop local programming that hasn't been there for us in about 30 or 40 years.
Songs at the Center is it a 5-episode program?
Well, that's our pilot season. We actually shot 3 programs, and then Channel 4 offered us 5 slots. So we're stretching 3 programs into 5. So our pilot season is from now. It runs every Tuesday night through June 17th.
And tell me a little bit about how is each show laid out?
Well, we have performances. We have 3 writers that are featured, each doing 1 song. And then we have an interview segment that's away from the stage. It's done in the green room, which is actually blue. But we want, obviously, to provide the energy of a live performance with a live audience, but also give the viewer some insight into what goes into the heart and the mind of the writer when he or she is writing the song, because a lot of people find that interesting.
Let's talk a little bit about that. you know, I grew up playing guitar and playing in bands. And for me, at least initially, the excitement was, wow, I just want to be doing something cool like this. And the older I get, the more I find myself identifying as a songwriter, you know, spending more time honing the song rather than the actual performance.
Right.
How does a songwriter concert differ from, say, just seeing a band perform?
Well, I always believe, and I may be partial because I'm a songwriter myself, but I believe there's no greater performance of a song than from the songwriter, him or herself. It comes right from the heart. And even, you know, let's take a place like the Bluebird Cafe. I've heard, you know, hundreds of hit songwriters down there do the songs that have been recorded by other artists. When they sing it themselves, it has a whole, sometimes a whole new, different, deeper dimension to it than when the artist does it themselves. So I think that, you know, people who, and I think that's one of the reasons that people are gravitating now towards songwriting and listening to songwriting is that it's real. We live in such a processed world. And I look at Songs of the Center, this TV show, as kind of providing the same kind of exposure and service to songwriting that craft beers have done to that particular market. You know, mm-hmm. we got, as consumers, we got tired of the processed mass-produced stuff and created smaller markets. And I think that that's where we're going with songwriting, and that's what Songs at the Center is addressing.
Yeah, I remember the first, I got to work with Jeffrey Steele a couple times.
Oh, I love Jeffrey Steele.
And to see him perform his own songs, and I'd heard most of those songs performed as top 40 country hits.
Right.
And, you know, sometimes that kind of music doesn't always relate to me. And, you know, it seems a little canned sometimes. But to see him play it, I was like, wow, there really is a lot of heart and soul in some of this.
Yeah, he's one of the very best.
John, let's talk a little bit about the McConnell Arts Center. Mm-hmm. You have an auditorium with 213 seats.
That's correct.
And as far as auditoriums go, that's not huge.
No, it's not. And that's the beauty of the venue, is the opportunity to really get up and close and personal with the artist that is performing on stage. And that's really sort of at the crux of what we do as an art center, is really the mission to support the artists working, breathing, and living in our own communities. Sometimes, you know, as you know, artists are much much more appreciated outside of their own worlds than they are in their own backyards. And I think that, you know, the McConnell Arts Center is really one of those places that can help nurture that, support that, promote that at all different levels. So there's many different levels of access for people. And the stage is one of those that is a really great asset to our own community.
And the McConnell Arts Center is not, I mean, you're involved with Songs at the Center, but you're involved in a number of things.
We are. We produce a little over 200 events a year, and that happens to be everything from educational opportunities, performances. Ballet Met, for example, teaches all of our dance classes for us. We have a dance studio downstairs. So we do a lot of different things. In fact, we also have a growing film and video production capabilities as well. So Songs at the Centers are really great opportunity for us to really help, as I said, not only support the artists, but also to really, you know, become part of the production team as well. So
I'm talking to John Cook, the artistic director of the McConnell Arts Center, and Eric Nesda, the co-creator and host of Songs at the Center. It's a new TV series on Channel 4's .2 channel, MeTV. It's featured every week for the next few weeks on Tuesday nights. We'll have a link up to that on our website. So let's talk a little bit about the future of Songs at the Center. Eric, do you think, I mean, qualitatively, does Columbus have enough talent to keep something like this in regular rotation?
Yeah, there's no question about it. You know, every city for it, like the songwriting movement or you know, music centers, as they call them sometimes, it seems like every now and then a city will pop up and has a really energized scene. And, you know, whether it was Atlanta at one time, you know, in the 70s, and then Seattle, and it just keeps moving. And I think Columbus is on the cusp of being one of those music centers. And the McConnell Center has been really instrumental in this, because not only has John and his staff been receptive, but they've been proactive in helping us really harness and focus the energy. And so I think that there's no question about there being enough talent.
As you mentioned before, you've done a lot of work in at the Bluebird and in Nashville. And if Nashville is considered the hub of songwriting, what is kind of unique about Nashville? I mean, why is it a songwriter's town? How does it like what is the vibe there that might be different from other cities?
Well, one of the things is that writers down there understand. I mean, there's a much larger writing community down there, but they understand the tremendous obstacles that any songwriter needs to go through to have his or her song heard. And there's a greater sense, I believe, of community in Nashville. The songwriters really help each other out. They compete with each other, but yet they also work together to help each other up that mountain. And I believe that if Columbus is going to, you know, really set its mark in songwriting, that all of the songwriting ventures need to work together to do that. And that's what the McConnell Center is helping us to do.
I have noticed that lately, at least in the past few years in Columbus. You know, when I moved here in the late 90s, I noticed a lot more competition, a lot more negativity. And it seems these days that everybody is trying to help each other out a little bit more.
Right.
What, I mean, as far as things go, what can Columbus do as a community to embrace this songwriting a little bit more so?
Well, part of our job is to educate the audience. I also do twice a month a songwriter showcase at Natalie's Coal-Fired Pizza and Live Music. And we knew starting out that one of our challenges would be to educate our audience how to listen and enjoy this particular genre. You don't walk in there and talk and dance, and it's really to
they
be
shushed me once.
But you know, it's really about spreading the word and helping educate an appreciative audience. And you know, when people I can't tell you how many people have said to me, "Wow, you know, I've never seen anything like this before." And usually talking about live rounds, either at the McConnell Center or at Natalie's, "I've never seen this. This is so cool. You have all these writers, and they're all different, but yet, you know, they work together so well." And so it's a genre that is very appealing. We just need to expose it more, which is, again, part of the mission of the McConnell Center and Songs at the Center.
I agree with that. I think that, like I said, one of our sort of tasks is to really support that creative effort at whatever level that may be. And I think that you know, the Columbus scene is very, as you alluded to, is becoming more supportive of that effort. Of course, it always takes money, a little bit of money, a little bit of time, a little bit of energy and effort, and more importantly, a big mouth to really share that process with audiences all over the city. So I think that is, you know, when we look at Columbus, I think we need to open our mouths a little more and really to really talk a little bit with our friends, family, neighbors, let them know what's going on in the songwriters' lives, for example, and tell them to come out and listen. I think that's really important.
Let's talk about the songwriters' lives. When I go see a singer-songwriter, I hear almost as much storytelling as I do music. And, you know, you just don't hear that when you go see a band. Why tell so much story? Isn't the song going to tell the story itself?
Well, the best songs don't need an introduction. They tell the story themselves. That is true. And I think that some of us songwriters tend to be guilty of talking too much and maybe not singing as much as we should. However, there's also legitimate interest in how songs came about, what the seed was for them, and those kinds of things. So I think as songwriters, we have to strike a delicate balance in performance between telling the story behind the song and just singing it.
Right. And it's also that friendship. I mean, you know, an audience member really wants to have that insight into being your friend, right?
Right,
to really find out what's going on behind the lyrics and behind the melody that people are performing. So,
yeah.
Let's get back to Songs at the Center for a second. Local TV supporting local songwriters. And I understand you also have a lot of external local support also.
Well, we could get some more, I think.
hint.
You know, that's always a challenge, but you're right. I mean, you know, the sort of snowball effect that this has on sort of local talent, as I said, supporting the local effort is really, it's very refreshing. I think it's also very exciting, and more importantly, it has so much potential for the future.
Eric, I understand you're also performing tomorrow?
Yes. Oh, thanks. I guess I am. Yeah, I'm at the Carriage House, which is a really nice venue out in Granville. I'm out there with a Nashville writer, Michael Logan, and then I'll be back at the Bluebird Cafe in Nashville on June 1st.
I want to thank my guests, Eric Nesda, the co-creator and the host of Songs at the Center, and also John Cook, the artistic director for the McConnell Arts Center, which is where Songs at the Center is filmed. Guys, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you, Chris.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with one of the featured songwriters at Songs at the Center.
When you've got a talent, sometimes despair. You pick up a couple habits, and sometimes I swear to God in holy heaven, how did I ever get this far? How did I ever? No, there's nothing like falling in love. Nothing I can recall. Nothing like falling in love. Nothing like falling in love.
Welcome back to All Sides Weekend. I'm Eric French, and we just heard a little bit of Eddie Rabbit's 1983 top 10 country hit, Nothing Like Falling in Love. And that was written by J.C. Schnars. J.C. is a performing artist as well as a songwriter here in Central Ohio. And he was featured on the debut episode of this week's Songs at the Center. And J.C.'s in studio with us right now. J.C., thanks so much for being here.
Eric, it's my pleasure, man. This is great.
So before we get into much of your music, I just want to know, what does your involvement with a program like Songs at the Center offer you?
Oh, it's heaven. It's wonderful. And I've got to back it up a little bit and talk about Eric Nesda, who's the guy that has done more for songwriters in this part of the world than anybody, than everybody else combined. He's just made so much happen for so many of us and created this incredible community of writers. And all those people that you're going to see on Songs at the Center are folks that he has brought together. And God, we have such a good time together. And Songs at the Center is just a nice little tip of the iceberg where you can see amazing people. This Tuesday night, for example, you know, incredible people. RJ Cowdery, who won the Kerrville Song Festival, she's amazing. Keith Larson, who's so good it's just wrong, and he won some national award that was put on by, I forget, but, you know, the CMT and somebody else. But he's incredible. And then Jared Mahone, who's so good, it's just ridiculous. And he's going to be huge. He's going to be gigantic. But, you know, these are the kinds of people that we all get to hang out with and be with, mostly because of Eric and the work he's done for all of us and for Songs at the Center as well.
Yeah, he's been a great resource for our show, too.
Oh, God, it's just, it's we're so lucky to have that guy in our lives, I'll tell you.
How important to the community is stuff like this?
Well, certainly to the songwriters community, it's such a treasure. It's such a gift. It's such a blessing. How it impacts on normal people, I have no idea. I don't know too many normal people.
Songs at the Center is the show that JC was featured on, and it's filmed by a local television station, and it's aired locally, and it's performed locally at the McConnell Arts Center, and the songwriters are all from Central Ohio. It kind of seems to me that the more technology expands, the world gets smaller.
Absolutely.
But at the same time, it's almost easy to forget what's going on locally, and you can't really get the whole experience just by watching YouTube all the time.
And that's a fact.
Yeah, and I think that stuff like Songs at the Center is a great way for people to connect, even if you're just watching. And you make the connection that these are local people, it gives you maybe a little bit more sense of ownership of the community.
Absolutely. And then, of course, we've got the McConnell Center, which is an incredible venue where we've all had the chance to play. And that's just if anyone hasn't been there, that is definitely a place you should go. It's gorgeous.
We'll put some information up on the website about the McConnell Arts Center. You know, I've never even been there.
Oh, it's breathtaking. It'll blow you away, man. It's such a fabulous venue. It's gorgeous. And then, of course, Natalie's is another place where all of us get to perform and hear each other. I mean, so many of us turn out for one another. And again, I think a lot of this is because of what Eric Nezd has done.
So you mentioned Natalie's. Natalie's is a local pizza joint slash concert hall.
Yes.
I've noticed a lot of that kind of stuff popping up lately. I mean, there seems to be a lot more of that let's get together and celebrate. What does the community, the sense of community, bring to your songwriting?
Wow. Well, for one thing, when we're recording, we've got so many people that we can bring on board to various projects. And that's been a huge advantage for myself and my co-writer, TJ George, because we bring in all these other people to perform and to sing. And it just makes what we do and what we write, it expands what we can bring to the table. It's been great.
So you mentioned your songwriting partner. Are you working on a record right now?
Well, we're working on a CD, and we're so close to finished, it's ridiculous. You know, we've got every song has got one piece missing. We're going to be recording percussion on Monday. We've got one more banjo track for another. We've got one more saxophone track for another, one more cello track. I mean, we're so close. And then we're going to get it mixed and mastered and put that out. And meanwhile, we've been working on some stuff for some film people in L.A. and in London. So some of those things will end up as little edits that'll go for those folks as well.
Well, you know, I actually have a little bit of a clip of one of your new pieces. You mind if I play a snippet of Wine or Whiskey?
Oh, go for it. Thank you.
Drone circles round the block in exploration, trying to find the courage to come up to your door. Been wandering without a destination, but now I need to know, now I need to know. Will it be a wine or whiskey evening?
What a great idea. Is it a wine or a whiskey evening?
Yeah. You know, because I don't know about all relationships, but pretty much every relationship I've never ever heard about, you get those moments sometimes where you're not sure, you know, are we coming or are we going? And sooner or later, you have that moment where you've got to confront this and you don't know how it's going to turn out. Is it going to turn out well or is it going to turn out unhappily?
Let's shift gears a little bit. While I was researching for this interview, I YouTube searched you.
Oh, and that's a scary thing.
And amongst other things, I found you performing at a house concert.
Yeah.
Tell me about house concerts.
Oh, they're heaven. Because they're so you're so close to the audience. And it's almost like, you know, being in your own living room with your friends. And it has that feeling to it. So you get to sing the songs and tell the stories and laugh and share. And we become more a part of one another's lives. And you know, it's a nice way for music to be. It's really intimate.
I've seen a lot of different genres embrace that house party, house concert. I've seen some of the loudest metal shows of my life in houses.
Sure.
And I usually walk away from those having a great time.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, JC, I actually met you a few years ago through something that ties into my program from last month. Last month, we did a show about the popularity of vinyl records.
Yes.
And when I met you, a record that you had made in the early 70s was kind of taking off.
Absolutely.
Tell me about that.
Oh, it's ridiculous. We made this record in about 1971, 72, pressed up 500 copies, sold 3. You know, each of our mothers bought one.
More than I've ever sold.
And, you know, the rest of them we've put away in closets, and then we went on to be at least attempting to be responsible adults. One of the guys is a big-time professor. One of the guys is a doctor, and I was a school teacher. And then the internet got invented. And the internet is a gathering place for every unusual person on the planet. And there's a whole raft of people out there that collect obscure vinyl recordings. And ours was certainly one of the most obscure. And it just took off as an internet sensation. I mean, I've seen them sell our record, which we sold for $3. I've seen them sell for $250 regularly. It's just crazy.
Have you since made a CD version of it?
Oh, we've got, there's a, it, we haven't, but there's now a double CD that you can buy with a 28-page souvenir booklet. It's crazy.
Wow.
It's wonderful. It's got, because we had recorded 2 albums worth of material, but then the drummer got into med school and the lead guitar player was already in graduate school, so we just decided to hang it up. But we had all these tracks, and it ended up as a double CD, and it's really very, very exciting for us. It's a hoot.
So they all kind of went on to other stuff, but I know at least you continued songwriting. You had, when we opened the show, you had a hit in the early 80s.
Yeah.
When you write songs for other people, do you write for other people? Do you hear somebody else's voice in your head?
Well, not so much when I write, but when I finish the song, sometimes it's really obvious to me. You know, the Eddie Rabbit tune, when that was done, in fact, as I was initially recording that, I could hear him do it. I was a big fan of his, and I definitely heard him. And I've, you know, some of the stuff that TJ and I have written, you know, I can hear Civil Wars or Little Big Town, you know, other artists pick some of this stuff up. You know, we're a TV theme. We've got a piece out that we're putting together now that is just a perfect. And one of the guys in LA that we're working with has a detective show that he's got into production, and they've got, I guess, 6 episodes in the can, and they're looking for a theme. So we just sent this out to him, see how that plays out.
So with all these different irons in the fire, it just makes me wonder, as a songwriter, how you define success. And has that changed over the years for you?
Wow. Well, I certainly appreciate every aspect of what I'm doing. I appreciate that much more now than I did when I was young. When I was young, I had no frame of reference. I didn't realize how marvelously magical all of this was. Now I'm at the point where every single moment, you know, I just am delighted by and enjoy. As a writer, I think what I really want to do, and what TJ and I certainly do, is we want to do the best job for the song. I look at songs like they're children. You know, you want to raise them right and give them the best push out the door you can to hope they can be successful.
You mentioned having TJ, your songwriting partner. How does something like ego play into this as a songwriter? I mean,
wonderful question.
Don't you kind of feel like if you couldn't complete it yourself, maybe you lost some control of it or something?
You know, I think young people think that way. I don't feel that way because, for one thing, he brings to the table a lot of things that I don't do well. And I bring to the table a lot of things that he doesn't do well. And it's just been a perfect matchup in that regard. I was never very good at writing visual images, for example. I can write emotional, you know, things and metaphors, but not that real stark visual stuff that makes so many lyrics so strong, whereas he can write fabulous visuals. And I'm better at throwing in 8 million harmony tracks.
Yeah, the track Wine or Whiskey, I heard a lot of vocals on that one.
Yeah, I just love to sing those harmony tracks.
It's funny for me to hear the record we just mentioned, the Kansas City Jammers was the name of your band,
right?
And to hear that record from 1971 or whenever, to hear the sound of your voice, how it's kind of progressed through the years.
I mean, aged, I think, is the word you're looking for.
But it's still pretty identifiable.
Yeah.
How is your songwriting? With the songs that you were writing back then, thematically, what has changed over the years for you that has inspired you to write?
Well, I think back then I was writing, you know, I was very heavily influenced by the people I loved, my family, and I'm still very heavily influenced by my family. I think more things I write have to do with that than anything. I think we all bring an awareness of what's going on in the world to what we write. You know, we want to responsibly address what we see and what we feel needs to be brought into other people's awareness.
A lot of times when I hear songwriters, I hear kind of like two distinct styles. There's the the song that begins with the word "I feel,"
right?
Or and then there's the sort of like telling of a story from a distance,
right?
I haven't really pegged which of the two you prefer or feel more comfortable in.
Wow. Whoa.
And how about that for a terrible generalization?
That's a wonderful. No, that's a wonderful, wonderful observation. God, that's a really good question. I don't know the answer to that question. I can think of songs that I've written recently that were definitely telling a story, and I think of songs recently that were definitely trying to celebrate people I love.
When you start, when you say get an idea for a song, do you kind of plot it out or storyboard it out, or do you just kind of start writing and see what happens?
So much of the writing I'm doing now, I'm doing with TJ, and it's really funny because Wine or Whiskey, for example, started off with him coming up with that line, will it be a wine or whiskey evening? And then it was like, okay, what brings you to that question? What's happening in your life if you ask that? This was TJ's great observation. You know, how did you get here? And then we just started ping-ponging ideas back and forth. And, you know, at one point he's in the studio recording the music beds for probably the verse, and I'm in the other room writing the bridge. And the whole thing came together in a day of just ping-pong, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. We're good. You know, you asked about ego earlier. We're really good at being comfortable with the other person saying, nah, that's not working. And, you know, we respect each other to the point where if the other guy says, that's not working, we go, okay.
Well, yeah, I mean, the thought being two creative people are going to come up with something a little bit better than, say, one creative person working on it.
Certainly if there's no ego involved, yeah, absolutely. And I don't know how he does it without any ego. For me, it's just a matter of being old enough that I don't care.
When I saw the first episode of Songs at the Center,
yes,
which you were featured on, and you were talking about learning music.
Yeah.
And in the days before home recording, if you wanted to play a song, you had to just figure it out and go with it.
Yeah.
Do you feel that that gave you maybe a stronger harmonic background, which to build your stories on?
Certainly it gave me a huge advantage as a songwriter. You know, in those days, unlike today, pop radio had just an immense playlist. The station we all listened to growing up in Philadelphia had a chart of 99 songs, and then they featured oldies and new songs that weren't even on the charts yet, so their playlist was immense. So you would hear your favorite song maybe once every two or three days if you were lucky. So we really had to, if we heard a song we liked, it was like, let's figure out the chords, and then anything we can't remember, we'll write. And we just did, and that helped.
Do you have anything, any public performances coming up that our listeners could see you at?
Well, we're playing tonight up at Ohio Wesleyan. We're playing
and who's
Sunday.
We is you and TJ?
Yeah. And then we're playing Sunday at a thing at Ruby Tuesdays at like 7 o'clock or something.
We'll dig up the information. We'll put it on our website.
And then next week we're at a winery up in Waldo, the Shamrock Winery. It's a beautiful place, and it's just been it's out in the middle of nowhere. It's gorgeous.
Wineries, McConnell Arts Center, house concerts.
Yeah.
Well, JC, we're about out of time, but I really want to thank you for being here.
Eric, it's wonderful to be here. Thank you for having me. Good to see you.
Absolutely. I want to give a quick thanks to Ann Fisher and Michael DeBonis for all their help with this. I also want to thank Amy Jurevich for directing the show. This is All Sides Weekend. I'm Eric French, and we'll be back next month.